from the Three Story Method Podcast Network.
This is the Serial Fiction Show.
I'm Christine Daigle.
And I'm JP Reinbush.
Welcome to the Reader's Serial Fiction Show. Today, we've got an LGBT fantasy by S.P. Somtow called Club X. St. Cecilia's boarding school is a hotbed of hormones, mystery, fantasy, and dark secrets. Five kids, three boys, a girl, and a boy-girl, uncover the dark secrets of their school amid mysteries of identity and sexual attraction. Vampires, dancing nuns, Club X solves every mystery.
Once referred to by the International Herald Tribune as the most well-known expatriate Thai in the world, S.P. Somtow is no longer an expatriate since he has returned to Thailand after 5 decades of wandering the world. He is best known as an award-winning novelist and a composer of operas. Born in Bangkok, Somtow grew up in Europe and was educated at Eton and Cambridge. His first career was in music, and in the 1970s, he acquired a reputation as a revolutionary composer, the first to combine Thai and Western instruments in radical new sonorities. Conditions in the arts in the region at the time proved so traumatic for the young composer that he suffered a major burnout, emigrated to the United States, and reinvented himself as a novelist. His earliest novels were in the science fiction field, but he soon began to cross into other genres. In his 1984 novel, Vampire Junction, he injected a new literary inventiveness into the horror genre. In the words of Robert Bloch, author of Psycho, skillfully combining the styles of Stephen King, William Burroughs, and the author of The Revelation to John, Vampire Junction was voted one of the 40 all-time greatest horror books by the Horror Writers Association, joining established classics like Frankenstein and Dracula. In the 1990s, Somtow became increasingly identified as a uniquely Asian writer with novels such as the semi-autobiographical Jasmine Nights. He won the World Fantasy Award, the highest accolade given in the world of fantastic literature, for his novel, The Birdcatcher. His 53 books have sold about 2 million copies worldwide. He is the first recipient of Thailand's Distinguished Silpathorn Award, given for an artist who has made and continues to make a major impact in the region's culture, from Thailand's Ministry of Culture. And now, a sample of Club X, Episode 1.
Our school has many secrets. The outside is shiny, all glass and chrome and pretty fountains. An orchard, a forest, nestled in a hidden valley, accessed by a private road, sheltered in the shadowy blue hill of Thailand's Khao Yai National Park. St. Cecilia's has sunny, open classrooms and modern boarding facilities. It's a residential boys' school for the elite, staffed by nuns who are surprisingly secular, with a world-famous performing arts and music program, as befits being named after the patron saint of music. It's a Catholic school, meaning that it received its charter when Siam was invaded by well-meaning Jesuits a century ago. But it has few Catholic students, which is true of all such schools in this country. It's generously endowed, so much so that it can afford to give full scholarship to almost half the boys. The other half are filthy rich, including me. Now, behind the gleaming facade, there are passages, rooms not opened since World War II, skeletons in closets. There are staircases that lead to nowhere, tunnels, ghosts, secrets rooted in broad daylight. Secrets whispered in the night. We were 5 friends, 3 boys, a boy girl, and the principal's daughter. Our year together in class Matayom 5 was when we became close. I'm Kim, and soon you will meet my friend, Luke, Danger, Donut, and Polo. We fought each other. We loved each other. We played games with our minds. and sometimes with our bodies too. We were young, and we craved experiences, no matter how hair-raising or unconventional. We weren't afraid of anything at all. We were Club X. And together, we would uncover, one by one, the dark mysteries in the hidden corners of our school. The voice of danger. I know I'm dreaming, so I struggle to. I see stairs, a lot of stairs, twisty, curvy stairs, and grimy old walls. I hear slow footsteps and something going thump, 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 slowly, like it's heavy as a lifeless human body. In my dream, I'm following, but at a distance. I don't want to be seen. I stay in the shadow. The stairwell keeps changing direction, so I can stay right behind, just out of the way and not be seen. I'm scared I'll be heard. I'll tiptoe. In my dream, I have no shoes. I'm quiet as a mouse. Leather shoes clattering against iron railing. The scrape of a body against concrete steps. I fall. The stairwell shifts. I huddle in a corner behind a stone pillar. Thump, thump. A door creaks. Another stairway now, narrow. I open my eyes and I am the dead man. My head thudding, step by step, being dragged by my arms roughly. I'm not alive, I'm not dead, I'm in between. I don't see who's dragging me because I can only see the way behind as I'm dragged. I'm heavy as lead. The person pulling me up the stairs is panting, really exerting himself. I'm turning a corner now and I look down and I see someone on the landing. It's me. I want to cry out. I want to pull myself out of the dream, but I can't reach him, the living me, because I'm already dead. We pass a corridor now. Strange animals in painting with antique frames stare back at us. At the end, there is a door. The door yawns. Why? There's light. Blinding light. Wake up! I scream to myself. The dead to the living. I woke up, but I was sure I must still be dreaming, because when I switched on the bedside lamp, standing right there in a shaft of soft yellow light, there's a girl, and she's amazing in an almost supernatural kind of way. She has dazzling eyes. Her hair is long, a little wavy. Her lips are parted in a half smile, a little bit pouty. She's caught in a split second before laughter. I've never seen her before in my life. And I'm in my room in St. Cecilia. And this is the weekend before school starts. And for God's sake, this is a boys' boarding school. And yet, she looks so familiar. And then she laughs, rips open her blouse, and lets the wadded up pink toilet paper flop out. Oh no. Thought you were having one of your visions, Danger. Now, I sat up on the bed. Polo, my roommate, was stripping off her shirt. His shirt. Get up and help me with my makeup, he said. He handed me a soft wipe. I didn't expect to find you. I thought I'd settle in a day or two early. Anyways, you could have used your superpowers to predict it. I don't have superpowers, I said. You just don't realize it, Polo. Polo flipped a light switch. He bent down and I swiped at his face. In a few seconds, he was masculine again, at least as masculine as he ever was. He was soft, slim, not exactly defined, but definitely a boy. My best friend since elementary school. He sat on the chair next to my bed, and I finished wiping, and he started to cut his nails. You startled me, I said. I never saw you go all out like that. But I was good. I have to admit it. Listen, Dange, when we were on vacation, I had a revelation. An epiphany, a life-changing moment. I thought your parents were going to send you to some temple for a couple of weeks, straighten you out or something. Oh, they did. And did you? Straighten out. Well, one of the monks taught us how to meditate. On danger, I saw things like you always do. I had one of those icky, those moments of revelation. I talked to the girl inside my boy's body. And what did she tell you? She said to me, "You know who you are." But in that moment, there was nothing feminine about the way Polo moved or spoke. "And exactly how were you planning to appear in class on Monday?" I said.
Hey, Christine.
Hey, JP.
Did you know that Pro Writing Aid is hosting a free virtual summit on the Science Fiction Writers Week?
I sure did, because I signed up. It's August 29th till September 2nd, and they have some great authors, and I am so excited to join.
Yeah. So this is their biggest event, and they'll be hosting over 30 sessions on topics like editing, outline, drafting, and interviews, like you said, with best-selling authors like Andy Weir. So the registration link is prowritingaid.com/sci-fi-week/sign-up, and all of the spaces are hyphens. We'll put a link in the show notes so that you can check that out.
Yeah, and the best part is that it is completely free for Pro Writing Aid users. So if you want to write that best-selling science fiction novel, you don't want to miss it.
100%. Definitely interested. So when you attend, both and or one of us will be there in spirit as well.
Yes. And as always, if you don't use Pro Writing Aid, use our discount. Serial 20.
S-E-R-I-A-L 20. Serial, like the killer, not the breakfast.
So JP, let's talk about Later Press. So Later Press is a platform built to help authors declare their independence. It lets authors create digital books and sell them directly to their readers through their own branded website. And there are new things coming to the platform every day in terms of discoverability and new features. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I put Nerds on Later Press, and it was a really easy and really fast process, which was pretty cool. And one of the cool things was you can put a collection, and then you can put your, we put Nerds in the collection so that ideally if we do any spinoffs or if we do any like season two or like specifying those pieces, you can put those books in the collection, which is really nice. And it's a really nice way of like hierarchical pieces to it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And it basically gives you your own website. Ours is nrds.laterpress.com. And you just direct your readers straight there and they see Nerds. It doesn't get blocked by anything else. There are no ads in the way. There are nothing. It's just straight up Nerds content for your readers to get straight to reading, which is different than some other platforms, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And I did the same thing, although I uploaded all of my books to a collection just so I had one place, you know, to direct readers. And so I have Molecule Thief, Dark is Away, and the Steampunk Emerald Key is up there. So it's one link. People can see all your books and you can order them whatever way you want, or your serials. You can put serials up as well. And and you can do it on a subscription model or pay per book. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, which was a really cool.
Yeah,
the pricing thing was pretty cool. Figuring out either doing per book or some type of a subscription model just to kind of give your readers different abilities to support you, because some people really like the, you know, it's basically like a Patreon, but you just get content to read.
Yep. And the cut is just 5%.
Yeah. So test it out, try it out.
Yep. Laterpress.com.
See you later, press.
So we love this episode for so many reasons. A school full of secrets, including Club X, a secret club. I have to know what inspired you to write this serial.
Okay. It's a long and rather interesting story, I think, because, of course, it was not intended to be a serial on Bella at all. During various bits of my past, my checkered past, I was involved in film in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And but I had not been for about 20 years, really. A Thai producer comes up to me, who I've known for all my life. He's actually a childhood friend. And he said, Do you have any ideas for a serial? Not a novel here. I mean, an actual video serial.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas that I could sell to one of those international platforms? He said to me. I said, I don't know. Let me do some research. So I went to I turned on Netflix and looked at what are they showing that's from Thailand on Netflix, right? And I noticed that every story that was showing on Netflix that was from Thailand at the same time had the same theme. It was basically it was all about teenage boys in a boarding school. Okay, mm-hmm. So I thought, well, this must be a medium that nobody else is making. So maybe it's something to do with the Thailand is a very odd culture. In some ways, it's very uptight, and in other ways, it's much more permissive. So it's quite different. And I thought, but this is not something I've ever done in my life in over 50 years of writing novels, and I've never done anything on this subject. So I said to my friend, whose name is Coco, by the way, I said to him, look, this kind of an intriguing subject, but maybe if I could use this milieu and combine it with something that Americans, that's more to the American market, like a kind of coming of age, Stranger Things, It, that kind of thing, except that use the sort of the boy love sort of milieu and have the plot be something completely different. So I say, oh yeah, okay, try that. And so I took a look at all these favorite coming of age films that I like, and I noticed that basically they basically have four boys in them, right? There's like a cute one and a tough one and a fat one and a weird one. Now, that seems to be like the, and then there's like a girl who they all like, but somehow she ends up with the cute one. So this is basically everything from Stand By Me to Stranger Things has that kind of thing. Oh, there's other standard characters like the bully who is from an older grade who has a heart of gold but he's actually being abused at home. They're like this generalized plot. So I thought, well, it would be very interesting to translate this entire plot to this completely different milieu. So that's basically was the genesis of this project. So so now you might know that in Asia, the serialized novels have been sort of de rigueur for years.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had done two like 20, 30 years ago in English that were in the Bangkok Post every week. One of them was my novel Jasmine Nights, which I put together and eventually, actually it's under option again after so long. Nice. And that's another coming of age, but quite different from this. So I said to Coco, I should really write this up as a serial because to get the audience primed for it. But even though I was born here in Thailand, I grew up in Europe and lived in the States for most of my life. So I wasn't really that keen on writing something in Thai, especially in Thai teenageries. Yeah. You know, because I don't know that many of them.
I can't even do English teenagers, so I don't know how you would do it in a second language.
So I said, look, I'll. There's this thing called Vella that I just discovered. I said, why don't I write this for Vella, and then at some point it can be translated into Thai and up here in all the Thai platforms. So that's actually what happened. And at the very same time that I was writing the first few episodes of this, we were actually shooting a trailer for the series. Then let me see what happened. Oh yeah, COVID.
Oh yeah.
couldn't shoot the series anyway. So I went on with the Bella, and you know, about 10 people read it every month. And then suddenly people actually started reading it. And this took me by, I was completely shocked. And I think it began when some people recognized my name from when I used to write fiction 20 years before, because I had sort of burned out, really. And I moved to Thailand. I was working mostly on music. Right. So I think some people noticed that I was, and then readers started showing up. And for a couple of months, it was in Vella's sort of top 10 faves. And this enabled me to convince some American friends of mine to put up some money to shoot the series.
Nice.
So it was sort of a circular thing. But see, meanwhile, what happened is that during COVID, I got back into film because I have this orchestra. I have a few orchestras, but the youth orchestra in particular, they couldn't get any work because they weren't allowed to play music together, right? And my friend Paul Spurrier, a film director who lives here, was complaining to me that he couldn't get his people, his film crew, they couldn't get any work. So I thought, well, he said there is kind of a loophole in the regulations, which is that an orchestra could rehearse and get together if they were in a movie, because they were not going to shut down the movie business. I mean, because especially when people were cooped up at home for months at a time.
Yeah.
They needed their soap operas.
Yeah.
that was the one thing that the government here did not shut down. So Paul and I produced a movie called The Maestro, which is about a mad composer who kidnaps a youth orchestra and takes them to a abandoned mansion and forces them to perform his masterpiece, only because he's mad, he actually kills them from time to time, especially when they play out of tune. From time to time, he gets into a rage. It's like your typical, almost your typical horror movie. So anyway, the point I'm making is that by the time COVID was ending, this film had been doing the festival rounds. And it's so far, it's actually won 25 awards.
Well, congrats.
And some of the awards are even from decent festivals. So I had the sort of credibility to work on Club X. And at the same time, the Bella thing caused me to be able to get money to. So obviously I was hooked. I couldn't stop writing Bellas, because if I did, then I wouldn't be able to talk anybody into. I wouldn't say it was a vicious circle, because it was actually rather a fulfilling circle. But I ended up working on three of them at the same time, and which is where I am now. And the miracle of it is that I rediscovered my writing career as a result. So now I'm sort of back.
That's fabulous. Yeah.
Different information. You know?
yeah.
That's awesome. So with Club X, I'm curious, what character are you excited for readers to read about and why?
Well, one of the things about this is that, okay, we have the four boys, right? And so each one of them has something that's a little extra that's not normally in these kind of stories. I mean, first, you know, it's a boys' boarding school, so there's something a little ambiguous about their sexuality. But it's not something that I dwell on, and nobody's agonizing over it or anything. It's something that everybody's accepting. So the main character, the sort of the cute one. It has a touch of Asperger's. Is he the tough one? I'm not sure which. Then one of the kids is sort of a living encyclopedia. So he's a sort of a knowledge geek. The third kid, one might say that he's trans, but he's not in a sense, because he's actually able to walk freely between different genders without being bothered by it. And so this is something that is much more common here in this part of Asia, where people simply are unconcerned about, and where gender is very fluid. So that's the third character. And the fourth character is a boy who appears to have some kind of mystic or sort of superpower, like psychic abilities, but he can't quite figure them out for himself. So they're all, this character who is actually the character who's fluid, moving back and forth between genders, is actually, you know, my adopted son, Mikey, was like that. And he died about a year ago. And because unfortunately he also suffered from schizophrenia and it sort of drove him. So one of the reasons I wrote this story was as a kind of remembrance of his life, and also because I wanted people to have a more accepting or a more I'd say not to make such a big deal about this. So in this vela, he changes gender back and forth, though. But he doesn't make a big deal of it. And I think that this might be something that people who are concerned about their own young people might be able to identify with. So if you ask me which character, that I think that's one of the more interesting ones from that point of view. But I, for me, all four of them have something that I wish I knew those people.
Yeah, that's lovely, and I think that's lovely that you took influence from your adopted son, and that's something that was starting to kind of creep its way more into, you know, North American stories.
Yes,
having more, you know, non-binary and gender fluid and trans characters. But yeah, so I think that's great. And JP and I have talked about this before, like that we really enjoy stories that kind of don't make that a big deal, that it's just accepted. And I just think that's fabulous.
Yep.
So is there anything else, without giving away too many spoilers, that you would like listeners to know or to be excited about?
Spoilers, well, the school has a lot of dark secrets. And some of the secrets are more fun than scary, you know. They can barely sort of walk into a room without some dark secret popping up. So I didn't exactly know where I was going, I have to tell you. I knew what the resolution of the story was going to be, because there's two basic mysteries in it. One of them is why the two main kids won't talk to each other, because it's because something happened before and slowly uncovering what that is one of the plot strands. And the other one is like, what actually is this school really about? What is it? Are they vampires? Are they aliens? Who knows? I mean, are they all three? Oh, did I say three? That's two. So basically, and unfortunately, the first book or season appears to only set up set it up. So I'm now sort of forced to do sequels, because having learned these things at the end of the first book, now they actually have to have some more crazy adventures. So I've sort of planned up to about three volumes worth of this. So
nice.
Excellent. So how did your world travels influence this piece?
Well, it's hard to divorce myself from who I've been and where I've grown up. I left Thailand when I was 6 months old because my dad was doing his doctorate in Oxford. And I was raised in many different European countries and also partly in the US. And when I came back to Thailand for the first time at the age of about seven, I was totally a stranger in a strange land. And it was the culture. I didn't even speak the language at the time. And my parents started switching to this language that they hadn't spoken to me when I was a child. And they did it as a secret language so that, you know, I wouldn't know what they were talking about, right? I just suddenly had to jump into this, this what appeared to be a completely alien culture. And then, so often I've been able to look at these things that are true in this culture from an outside viewpoint. So in that way, sometimes it's easier for me to write about something and make it interesting to an American audience or to a Western audience. And I think that's partly the answer to your question, really. When I grew up in about four countries before I was 7 years old, and I had to learn a lot of languages. And basically, one of the things I learned is not to take any culture or any rules for granted, that they were always going to be the rules of wherever I was, because they were always different. And in a way, it was a very confusing childhood, but also it allowed me to be more accepting, I think. This helped me a lot when I became a writer, because I started in science fiction, and even though science fiction is set on other planets or in other futures, it's still really writing about what you know. Mm-hmm. If you already know that things can be different, it helps you to make them different believably, I think. So yeah, I would say that would be as for helping me to write this particular story. Yeah, I was actually in a Catholic school very briefly in my childhood, and it was extremely weird. And some of the sisters are actually based on real ones, although they would probably never admit it.
I love that. So you went to Catholic school, but you also had some time as a Buddhist monk. So
yes.
How did that influence the story at all? Or
You see, here's the thing. As a child, I didn't really have any kind of one sort of philosophy or religion, because we were always moving. In the 19th century, I think, or maybe the late 18th century, a lot of Jesuits came to Thailand, and they convinced the Thai royalty that to let them stay and open schools and things like that. So there are actually a large number of Catholic schools in Bangkok, which is a very strange thing, because almost nobody in Thailand is Catholic. And so I think that they believed that what would happen was that they would give this great education and everybody would get converted. But what actually happened is that people took advantage of the education and didn't convert. I think that, and one of the things that might be strange to readers who are not used to this culture is that there's a Catholic school in the middle of a Catholic boarding school in Thailand, and hardly any of the kids are Catholics. That's actually really common here. But it means that I had, I say when you watch movies that are set in Catholic schools where everybody is Catholic, there's a lot more guilt attached to it. So we didn't have much guilt in that school.
So one of your characters is a musical prodigy, yes. And you're a composer. So how does music influence the serial?
Oh, well, that's a really interesting question because I found that music plays a much bigger role in my writing in general. When I was living in LA, I got a job writing scripts for cartoons, right? And I suddenly realized that the structure of a 22-minute cartoon is the same as a classical sonata form, right? So basically, it starts off with an exposition. You introduce the situation, and then there's a development. Then there's a commercial. And then there's a development where the plot gets complicated, and the end is where the threads are tied up. And I found it, if I use this exact structure in writing cartoon scripts, it could also work. It actually worked quite well. So basically, I used music. Very few of the cartoons that I wrote are on the air anymore. The only one that's still on the air, I got 71 cents for it the other day. It's an episode of Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, which I wrote. So one of the embarrassing things is that although I've supposedly written so many important things and when I meet a lot of people, that's the only thing of mine they've ever known. that episode of Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
That's funny. Yeah, I watched that. I watched that as a kid, and now my son, my 14-year-old son, was watching that like a couple of weeks ago. He's like, "I'm watching Chippendale's Rescue Rangers." I'm like, "That's from when I was a kid." So
that's an episode where Professor Nimnal disguises himself as a Persian carpet salesman, and he puts these carpets into rich people's houses, and at night they roll up and they take all the art and all the stuff from the houses and fly away. Okay, so that one's mine.
Fantastic.
And so Chip and Dale get trapped in the carpet. And they discover it's actually an electronic device. I use musical devices in everything that I write. And as you probably know, this character of Fluke in my story, he has to translate everything into a musical device before he can understand it. He's very, he's really in love with Bach because Bach's music, everything falls into place exactly. And he wishes the world could be like that. And his friend, Kim, he's the same thing. Kim is very good at seeing the pieces and making the puzzle fall into place. And Fluke has a different way of looking at these puzzles, where he's more into the means of the two characters are very complementary to each other because they each have a missing piece of the other person's character, and this comes from really this really comes from music, as you say.
That's amazing. So with Club X, kind of one of the joys of serials is audience participation. Have you had any audience feedback or participation in this story?
Well, when I first joined Novella thing, it gave the impression that the audience would actually, you've heard this before, the audience would actually write back and you could have conversation. And I was a little sad to see that didn't actually happen. But on the other, although on the other hand, if you get some crazy person, I suppose it could be. I mean, we all have them. But I have one crazy person who's been leaving messages on my answering machine for 30 years.
Oh. Okay.
Oh boy. So,
that's a bit of a terror about that. But on the whole, I've always loved to interact with people who read. So I was hoping that this would be I do get emails and talk to people about it. But in a way, although I suppose if I had the kind of following that, George Martin had, I probably wouldn't have time to actually write. So there is that.
That's true.
Very true. So can you tell us a little bit more about the TV series being made on Club X?
Oh, yeah, I can. In fact, the first season, it's almost exactly like the first season of the Vella, because the Vella, in a way, was me figuring out the plot of the series. So in fact, although the series is in Thai, so I had to listen to a lot of teenagers speaking in Thai and translate this. It's not, the things they obsess about are sometimes different, so you have to also translate the art. But basically, it's very, very similar. I discovered that about 2 or 3 episodes of Vella would make a perfect episode of a live action series, because each of the cliffhangers would be exactly where a commercial would come.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and the size of the chunks is just right. It's just right for like a 12-minute bit. I was so thankful that Vella came into my life because of just for that alone, And so casting, but we had started to cast it, and I was only about halfway through the writing the serial. So they started feeding off each other, because now I had actual faces and actual sort of mannerisms that they had and stuff like that. So it was working. It was a little bit incestuous, I guess. I mean, they were all feeding off each other. So now that, I mean, I hope that people will like the first season enough to, so that I can do the next one. Whether the next one will actually have the same plot as the second season of the book, I have no idea, because there'll also be things like, somebody being unavailable, so I'll have to kill them off or something.
I'll just put them in a coma for a season.
Well, also, I don't want to be stuck with the syndrome that Sex Education and Stranger Things happen, where they're so old by the third season that they can't really believe the story. Because I actually tried to use the kids who are actually the right age in this serial, rather than 30-year-olds. I'm hoping that they, of course, one of the advantages of having 30-year-olds is that they don't grow up so visibly, so you can make the series last longer. But I suspect it won't last more than about 3 seasons because of that. I think one of them has decided that they're going to go and study in Australia. So it's the one who plays the trans kid. So I might have to kill him off, which would be really sad. Or he did say that he could come back in the summer vacation and we could shoot him then. So maybe if I work around that schedule, it could work.
Nice. Very nice. And so do you have a platform or an approximate time that's coming out, or is that still too far down the road?
It's a little far down the road. And to be honest, I haven't a clue who will like it. I haven't a clue. I mean, because it's, since I decided to combine two rather genres that don't get combined very often, or maybe at all. I'm not sure which audience this is really for. I mean, that's, I sort of tested it to local teenagers. They all seem to be into it because it's actually quite funny. I think the humor is like one of its main attractions, much more so than anything frightening or mysterious. I think it's the humor of real kids interacting that's what they like. So hopefully it'll find its audience. And the investors, I'm sure, will be very annoyed, but that is the last resort thing of putting it on Amazon Prime and trying to collect the mm-hmm. one penny per hour that they give you. I think they pay even less for that than they do on Vella. So.
Ouch. Yeah, ouch. Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm excited. I want to watch it when it comes out. So hopefully that's sooner rather than later.
It will have subtitles.
That's right. I love watching the subtitles, so it's perfect.
Yeah.
It will have subtitles. I mean, you might recognize this if you've read the book. You might recognize the subtitles. They might be the actual dialogue. they might not actually be saying that at all.
That's fantastic. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your other serials that you have up?
Sure. Sure. I'm doing two other series, and both of them are a little... one of the things I discovered when I came back to writing is that I could... That fella allowed me to write about things that I either couldn't or didn't dare or were too offbeat. Because I suppose the all-powerful New York editor would be telling me that I can't sell that. Oh yeah. No, don't. I remember when after my novel Vampire Junction came out, it did well, and I kept proposing different things, and they would say no, it's too weird. And then finally I said, I'll just write a sequel to Vampire Junction. And they just sent me a contract. I mean, they didn't even ask for the plot, you see. So that's the trouble with, of course, New York Publishing was good to me at the time, but it also tried to make me write the same book over and over again, right? So the two serials that I'm writing that are, like Club X, they're just different from anything I would have written before. And one that I started when I was stuck at the beach for 2 weeks. Well, not stuck, but I was doing an orchestra camp, and I just had this idea that I would combine a Regency romance with a science fiction story. So basically, I started writing this fake Jane Austen novel that combined Sense and Sensibility with E.T. basically, that one I just got back to it after about a month away from it. So you'll be seeing a lot of episodes of that come out
nice.
Quite soon, and. That allowed me to do this hilarious voice of the early 19th century, late 18th century sort of very proper kind of person, which was fun to do, you know. And the other story was I always wanted to write an ancient Roman spectacle epic, but they've all been written, so. So I found one of the most fascinating and unusual characters in the ancient Roman world, this slave named Sporus, who the Emperor Nero took. He apparently looked exactly like Poppaea, the Empress Poppaea, who Nero killed, you know, by kicking her in the stomach when she was pregnant. It was a horrible man, really. And so he looked. He apparently this slave looked a lot like Poppaea, and Nero just castrated him and married him and made him the empress. After that, Nero died, and the next emperor, the one after the next emperor was this guy, Otho, and Poppaea had been his wife before Nero got rid of him. So he married this slave woman too. This is a slave male as well. Then after that, another emperor. After that, he tried to do the same trick on the emperor Vitellius, who took over. This was the year of the four emperors when everybody was fighting over the emperor. He tried to do the same trick on the emperor Vitellius, but the emperor Vitellius condemned him to be killed in the arena while dressed as Persephone. The idea was that it would be a staged version of the kidnapping of Persephone by Hades, and then he would end up, she would like be, this would all happen in the arena and end up with his or her death. So this unusual character hadn't really had a novel about before, but and yet it's exactly the same story as Ben-Hur and Quo Vadis. It's all those characters could appear. So I said, well, what if Gore Vidal had written Quo Vadis? What fun would he have had? You know, so basically I tried to write that novel. A lot of it is inspired by Petronius's Satyricon. And in fact, Petronius is a character in the book. So that's attracted a completely different readership from the other two as well. But it seems that there are quite a lot of Roman history buffs who like to be entertained. So, three different directions.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, that's excellent.
And I couldn't do it without Vella, because Vella gives you freedom.
Freedom, definitely.
To go down these different pathways that you would never normally sort of venture on.
Yeah.
I think you might have answered it just now, but as a final question, what do you like most about writing serial fiction?
Okay. Well, that's two things that I like about it. One is that I'm never entirely sure what's going to happen. I mean, I have an idea, right? And this is true when I wrote Jasmine Nights in the 1990s. The newspaper asked me to write a weekly serial, and I knew that it was going to be set in the 1960s and be about a young boy growing up. And I knew that I was going to have the Kennedy assassination occur in the story in November, so that it would act. That's all I knew about the entire plot. And somehow, because I had to deliver it every Friday night so that it would appear on Sunday, and because it had to be delivered, they didn't have time to really comment or edit, because they had to print it no matter how outrageous it was, right? So that gave me a lot of courage to push a little harder than I dared before. So that's one of the things I like about serials, that they make you dare to do things. And the other thing, which hasn't happened to me yet, is that it's just one little bite at a time. So it's like, you know, I'm always, my doctor says I shouldn't eat this and that. And I'm always thinking, well, one little bite. I'm always, and suddenly the whole cake is gone, right? But each time you do a little bite, you just think it's a little bite. And so I guess those are the two things that I love most about writing serials. The fact that you can be outrageous and not sure about what's going to happen, and the fact that it's one little thing at a time. So you have, so it doesn't scare you right away. You're not thinking, oh, I'm writing this 1,000-page novel.
Yeah. And I think, you know, because I mean, we were talking about before that we do suffer burnout, and it doesn't feel like so much at once. And I love that about that too. Then it's just a little bit at a time. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Our thanks today to SV Somtow for letting us share their episode. If you liked it, you can read the first three episodes free on Kindle Vella. The link is in the show notes.
And that's a wrap. That's a wrap. And off, I see you snickering. I just started laughing, imagining you leaned over laughing.